Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app.
Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to the Paranorm Girl podcast. I am your host, Kristen. On August 13, 1963, a mine in Shepton, Pennsylvania collapsed, trapping three miners 300 feet below the surface. A couple of weeks later, two out of the three men would thankfully be rescued. They would go on to tell a story about their experience down there that was not just about what you might expect. Struggle, doubt, survival. But one that included a spiritual realm, strange beings, life after death. We are talking about the Shepton mining disaster and other high strangeness that is on the menu in Pennsylvania that is included in the fascinating book, Coal Region Hoodoo, written by today's guest. Before I bring him on, everyone, thank you so much for the phenomenal feedback about last week's episode. Ghost lights are indeed pretty spectacular. Loved being able to get into the subject with you guys. And hey, that was a listener suggestion. We are just about to the middle of our season on ghosts and hauntings, but there is still time to get your own topic suggestion to me to cover before we wrap season 7. If you are hoping that I get to something in particular, don't hope. Confidently know it. Send your ideas over to paranormgirlpod@gmail.com. And thank you so much to River for suggesting ghost lights. All right. Let's get to today's very special guest. My guest has a background in rock music journalism and psychology. He is an author of numerous books about the paranormal and the highly strange, including Flying Saucer Esoteric, Shepton, The Myth, Miracle, and Music. And one that I picked up for today's discussion, Coal Region Hoodoo. He has appeared on well-known programs like Paranormal 60 with Dave Schrader and Midnight in the Desert with Heather Wade. And he is also a respected contributor to Fate magazine, Normal Paranormal, and Paranormal Underground. Please enjoy my conversation with Maxim Furyk.
Well, Maxim Furyk was named after his Ukrainian grandfather, Maxim, and his Czechoslovakian grandfather, Vencel. So it's Maxim Vencel Furyk that nobody ever says, but I'm Eastern European. I'm a former psychologist and a former rock journalist. And, when I do my research, I do it through a sort of like a psychological, sociological lens. I love the paranormal. I'm not a crazy zealot. I consider myself an academic. But what happened was 9 years ago exactly, I published a book called Shepton, The Myth, Miracle, and Music. And what I was doing was I was writing a rock biography about the song Timothy. Now, Timothy came out in 1971, and it was about cannibalism in a coal mine. I'm from northeastern Pennsylvania, and we have a lot of hard anthracite mines there, so it was hard coal. But the reason I was writing the book is because there was a group called The Boys, B-U-O-Y-S. They had a hit song with Timothy that was about cannibalism in a mine. And Timothy, the song, paralleled what happened in 1963 at an actual coal mine disaster in Pennsylvania. And in Shepton, three guys were entombed for 2 weeks. There was a miraculous story of human survival, an international story where they had reporters from Japan and the UK and Germany watching this thing. Finally, they extract two of the guys, and the neighbors were saying, well, what happened to the third guy? And there were these horrible allegations of cannibalism. So from this wonderful rescue, this triumph, you had this horrible, grotesque devastation of the cannibalism. But the more I researched Shepton, I started to come into other paranormal things like out-of-body experiences, near-death experiences, and afterlife experiences. Shepton is weird. It's the weirdest coal mine disaster ever, and very few people have heard of it. But even though people have heard about the 2010 Chilean copper mine disaster, and there was a movie called The 33, they rescued those 33 people. It was Shepton technology from 63 that saved those 33 people. Yeah. Shepton, Pennsylvania. Nobody knows about it, but I'm trying to spread the word and let people know. But still, Shepton remains pretty much invisible and almost esoteric knowledge. And that's going to change soon because we are working on a documentary, but that's to come later. But that's just like exciting thing. So that's my backstory. I'm a rock journalist. And in 2016, when the Shepton book came out, here's the thing. I wasn't looking for the paranormal. It stalked me. It found me. It hit me over the head. And in 2016, everything opened up. I was invited to paranormal expos, conferences. The Australian podcast Mysterious Universe did a 90-minute presentation on the book. And Skeptical Inquirer, which is great, they did this really long piece about the Shepton mythology. And then, of course, they bashed us right at the end. But it was good. It was like a lot of ink that they gave to us. So anyway, it's been, again, I didn't go looking for this. It happened in 2016. And so I've been doing this. And again, Kristen, if I'm an overnight success, it only took me 9 years to get to this place.
That's usually the story, isn't it? Yeah, overnight successes never happen overnight.
Yeah. So nine years and I think four paranormal books, but it's been great. The paranormal community has been awesome. I mean, they just, people come up to me and they tell me about the orbs that they've seen, mm-hmm. or they tell me about the dead people that they talk to. So I don't know if they think I have any special knowledge. I mean, I don't, but they come up to me and they confide. So it's almost like we're given a gift and we need to be respectful and use it, respectfully. I mean, that's really what it is. I mean, this paranormal is larger, I think, than any of us realize. And again, I mean, I'm just like having the time of my life, doing book signings and presentations and everything. It's great, So, and in programs like yours. So.
Oh, God, I'm so glad that has been the response. It seems like the paranormal world has just welcomed you with open arms. Mm-hmm. They must have really enjoyed the way that you lay out this information, because you do it in such a unique way that I've not seen a whole lot, the way that you go through that. And that must be your journalism background, the way that you are able to piece all of this stuff together. I want to ask you more about the Shepton mining disaster. But before we do that, maybe we could talk a little bit about Coal Region Hoodoo, the book that I
picked up, and it was a pleasure to read. There was so much. Like, I want you to describe to my audience what it is, because it's very hard to describe everything that's in there. And then why did you include all that you included in there?
Yeah, well, let me see. first of all, most of the books that are written about Pennsylvania, part of the book is written in anger and frustration. Most of the books written about Pennsylvania are either about the lost souls roaming around Gettysburg. You know, there's tons of books about that, the ghosts of Gettysburg, or the hex signs and the witches of Lancaster. So, you know, you go into any bookshop, any gift shop in Pennsylvania, and it's all Lancaster and Gettysburg. And there really wasn't much about the coal regions. So what I did was, when I wrote the book, I wanted to include narratives from northeastern Pennsylvania, that was the hard coal, and then also western Pennsylvania. And that's the Chestnut Ridge. Chestnut Ridge is the area, it's a 100-mile stretch from Pittsburgh down to West Virginia, where not only do they see the majority of Bigfoot sightings, but, and when I first heard that, I laughed, I didn't believe it, but Bigfoot sightings along with UFO sightings, Bigfoot and UFO. So it lends to the belief that there's a paranormal aspect to Bigfoot, that it's not just flesh and blood, but it's something else, whatever that something else is. You know, nobody knows, but we have plenty of theories. Mm-hmm. So that was it. So I wanted to write about the coal regions. And what I did was, I did a couple of things that are unique to Pennsylvania. And I would hope that your readers would get excited about this book, and not to think that it's just Pennsylvania centric, because there's a lot of themes there that are widespread, you know, to every state. But first of all, I have three movies that are Pennsylvania centric: Night of the Living Dead, The Blob, and The Philadelphia Experiment. All three of them were sort of generated, you know, the genesis was Pennsylvania. The one, you know, we went up to Butler County to interview the mayor, and this is where they shot Night of the Living Dead in 1968. And I contend, and I start the book off with Night of the Living Dead, that it wasn't, you know, ostensibly it was about zombies, and it helped kick off the whole zombie apocalyptic genre that is just proliferating left and right. But Night of the Living Dead, which was released in 1968, was not so much about zombies, but it was about our nation unraveling. I mean, we had the Tet Offensive in 1968, where the government, you know, the General Westmoreland said that every single province in South Vietnam was secure. And then the Tet Offensive, where every single province in South Vietnam got overrun by the VC. You had North Korea capturing the Pueblo, American battleship. You had the assassination of Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy Jr. You had the Easter Sunday riots, where over 100 cities were torched and burned by Black Americans who were just so frustrated that their leader was shot and massacred. And Democratic Convention, where Mayor Daley banned the Rolling Stones' Street Fighting Man, and just all kinds of crazy stuff. So what I write about is, and I tell people this, if you think 2024 is bad, you know, you don't want to get into a time machine and go back to 1968. That's when shit was hitting the fan. That's when things were bad. I mean, but the nation endured. I mean, we're a strong country, so we endured that stuff. And here we are, you know, but, you know, nothing changes. I mean, we always have challenges, whether it's pandemics or, you know, leaders or whatever it is. I mean, wars, famine, whatever, you know, so we've always had that. But I started to put the book together, and I used some popular culture, like those motion pictures, but again, through a sociological lens. I talked about the aspect of fear. I talked about the serial killer from Philadelphia, in the Dungeon of Horror, and he had these women down there, and it was just horrible stuff that he did with them. But they used this guy, and whose name is escaping me, which is really embarrassing. But
the Heidnik?
Gary Heidnik, yeah, thank you. Yep. Oh, good. Okay. Oh, good. Okay. You saved me. Okay. Yeah. They used Gary Heidnik who's in my book, as the role model for Silence of the Lambs, Buffalo Bill, you know, the weirdo that, you know, was making a suit out of somebody's skin, you know, things like that. So I have chapters in there about Bigfoot, about UFOs. I talk about the Kexper crash of 65. That's the Pennsylvania Roswell. I had met Ed and Lorraine Warren, the Conjuring folks, and I have a chapter about that. And Ed and Lorraine were my friends. I mean, I kept a relationship with them. I met them in 1988 when they were on a 15-city tour to promote their book, The Haunted. And Ed and Lorraine went up to northeastern Pennsylvania to help with the Schmerl haunting. This was in the Wilkes-Barre area. And they helped, they tried to cleanse it, and they couldn't. Had to bring in a priest, Father Alphonse Tribault from New York State, and it took him four exorcisms before he was able to go and cleanse the house. But, you know, he didn't have really 100% track record because he was trying to cleanse a house up in New York State, and he couldn't. And he told the people there, just get out of the house, take your possessions, don't tell anybody where you're going, you know, inside the house, and just leave. And Father Tribault said, some places are just evil. You know, we cannot touch them. We cannot cleanse them or bless them. They're just evil. We just leave them alone. So, and this is a guy that's what he did. You know, he was a spook hunter. So that was in my book. But I had a chance to know Ed and Lorraine Warren and to ask Ed Warren how he fought the demons. And he said that he would evoke the spirit of Jesus Christ, of Padre Pio, of Saint Michael the Archangel, and he would go and do battle with these demons. And, you know, you may or may not believe in a spirit world, you know, but I certainly do. I believe that, you know, the devil exists, you know, there's demons out there. And one thing that causes me concern are these young people flocking to former prisons and mental institutions looking for the demons. And, you know, no good could come of that. I mean, this is happening all over the place. And, you know, we might want to have a little disclaimer for your listeners. You know, if you're going to do that, just know what you're doing and don't get too close to the flame because, you know, there's spirits out there that want to get you. And there's nothing funny or comical about it. It's true. So,
yeah, especially for a lot of new investigators too, or like even thrill seekers. Like I've talked about the difference between investigating the paranormal and ghost hunting, like the difference between that. So people, who are just going for the thrill of it. Like I have heard more than enough stories of that going awry and not so great things happening. But you're right. So you see, listeners, like all of this, like it's hard to put it all into one little box, what Coleridge and Hoodoo is about, the kinds of information that it includes. So you're going to have to go get you a copy. It is worth the read. They're going to learn so much about you're right. Not just Pennsylvania, not just this, but all of these, like there's these tie-ins, all of these anchoring points that are swirling around this region. And then I noticed something else, and maybe this was just my making it up as I went, but it's not that it centers around Shepton, but you like Easter egg drop Shepton throughout. And then you really do explore it. In the middle, and then it's Easter egg dropped throughout. So it's almost like everything keeps coming back to this story. Let's go ahead and jump into that, if you don't mind. You did touch on it a little bit when we started, but the Shepton mining disaster, I would love if you would walk my audience through this story and what actually happened to these miners down there.
Yeah. So, three miners are trapped for 2 weeks underground. They were trapped 330 feet underground. And the two miners were separated from the third. So it was Dave Fallon and Hank Throne on one side and Louis Bova on the other. So they were separated. The guy that supposedly they cannibalized, you know, that I believe that there was a mountain of rock and coal between them. So I don't think that ever happened. But they were down there for 2 weeks, pitch black. When they finally came out, They took him to the top, and they only were able to extricate two of them. But they claimed, and Throne was 28 years old. Davy Fallon was 58. So there was this symbiotic relationship between the older Throne and the older Fallon and the younger Throne. So there's some symbiotic relationship where they helped each other to survive. So before they were extricated, the older Fallon told Throne, he goes, Davy or Hank, when we reach the top, keep your mouth shut. Don't tell them what we saw. So they took them, first they took Hank Throne, the 28-year-old, by helicopter over to the Hazleton General Hospital. And then a little bit later, they took Dave Fallon over by helicopter. The paparazzi were there in 63, just like they were in 2024. And they started to ask Hank Throne all these questions. And Hank Throne started to talk about what they saw down there, the stranger, you know, the Pope, and the weird things they saw, the humanoids. And all of a sudden, the cat was out of the bag. And what happened was, they claimed, the miners claimed, that they saw the vision of Pope John the 23rd. Pope John the 23rd died in June of 1963. Shepton took place in August of 63. It was a case of life after death. All three of the purported miracles of Pope John the 23rd happened after he died. And I was doing a conference. There was a Roman Catholic nun there. And I said, sister, did you know that all three of the miracles happened after the Pope died? She goes, well, of course. And I said, what do you mean, of course? She goes, well, he died and went to heaven and came down and he performed those miracles. Now, for those, again, you know, I mean, I don't care if your listeners believe in demonic spirits and you know, a spirit world. But when we talk about miracles, what we're talking about God working through somebody. So if in fact, you know, you or I were able to perform miracles, it would be one because we are devout, saintly, holy people, you know, in the guise of others, and also that God works through us. God uses us as a tool to create these miracles. So it wasn't so much about Pope John the 23rd as a man, as a person, but it was God choosing him to work through him. So Pope John the 23rd was canonized in 2014. Father Joseph Mary, who is the chaplain for EWTN, Eternal Word Television Network, that is the big Catholic media group from Alabama. And Father Joseph Mary has a video there that you could still see on YouTube talking about the miracle in Shepton and talking about Fallon and Throne and how Pope John the 23rd was there. And again, just by seeing him was the miracle. Now, how do these miracles work? You know, well, it's not that the Pope brought in the Calvary and brought in a rescue team to dig him out. He was just there in the side. And again, in all three of these alleged miracles, just was standing there on the side, giving them the sign of peace that they were going to be rescued, that everything's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. So what do we call this? Well, I call it a miracle. And they called it a miracle, and the Vatican called it a miracle. But you may call it a spirit guide. You may call it a guardian angel. You may call it something else, like the third man factor that I talked about. And I added that to the book in Co-Region Hoodoo. You know, I had sort of come to the conclusion that it was just a miracle, but then I'm thinking maybe it's more. Maybe when we talk about miracles, there's some room, there's some interplay, and we could say, you know, wonder what exactly it is. One of my personal theories is as we walk on our journey through life, and again, it's about the journey. We have no idea where this is going to end. You know, I mean, like, you know, as long as we're having joy and fun and all that and meeting people. But along that journey, we have ancestors and spirit guides, you know, guardian angels. They're there. They accompany us. And again, they don't really, I don't think they get us out of trouble. They don't do that. They don't bring the guns and the cavalry, but they just give us a sign that, yep, you're going in the right direction. You know, attaboy, you're doing pretty good. So that's what they do. They affirm us, they validate us. And I think that's what Pope John the 23rd did in the mine. He was there for the 2 weeks and they saw him. They had out-of-body experiences. And I have a chapter on St. Teresa of Avila, and she is just like a wonderful individual. You got to read about her. She was a 17th century Spanish mystic. And St. Teresa of Avila chose to become a Catholic in a time when they had the Protestant Reformation and the Spanish Inquisition, when they were chasing down Catholics and, you know, killing them. And they were in cahoots with the devil. So, I mean, they didn't like them. She became a sort of like a zealous born-again Catholic. And she believed, St. Teresa of Avila believed that through prayer and meditation, we can reach states of ecstasy, rapture, and flight of the soul. And that's that out of body experience, which the Shepton miners experienced. Now, this is good stuff. This is, you know, okay, how do I reach that state of ecstasy? How do I reach that state of nirvana? How do I have an out of body experience? Well, that's the key. Prayer and meditation, you know, 9 to 5. You don't have a job. You know, you're not taking care of your kids. You're not working on your podcast. You're just at home with prayer and meditation till you reach that state, till you get rid of all the white noise and clutter and everything else and reach that state. Not all of us. You know, only those of us who are chosen, and maybe God works through us. So you have that God connection too. But, you know, and again, for your listeners that might shy away from the word God, you know, put something else there, put in higher power or whatever you like. But I mean, it's not a bad word. It's a good word. And you're not going to get away from it. God surrounds us as part of us. We're all spiritual beings made in the likeness of God. And we're spiritual creatures. And we all have a need to express that spirituality. So, I mean, I know a lot of people freak out about God. And this isn't about religion, but I know a lot of people, because their baby brother died, they're angry at God for taking away their baby brother. But anyway, I don't mean to get on my soapbox about that. Okay. So, but anyway, St. Teresa of Avila is in my book. But here's the thing. I wanted to put some spirituality in my book, and I really wrestled with it. And I'm thinking, okay, people aren't going to like this. They're not going to accept it. And I thought, wait a second, I'm going to go with my gut, go with my heart. So St. Teresa of Avila has as much right to be in my book as does Ed and Lorraine Warren, the demonologist. So that's Crow Region Hoodoo. And I would say this too. And again, I want to thank you, Kristen, for those kind words about my book. But for those of you who have any kind of a slight interest, do this. Jump on Amazon.com and look up Coal Region Hoodoo and just read some of those, I think, 60 reviews. I mean, when I read them, I get goosebumps. I mean, they like my book. I mean, can you imagine? They actually like
it. It feels good, don't it? Yeah. Well, to be recognized for something that obviously took just so much attention, so much focus from you, and probably a lot of time to get it together. Right. All right.
And Beyond the Fray did a wonderful job proofreading, formatting, getting it out. It's a great book. I mean, I think my best book. I mean, I love it. And I get so many compliments on it. And it only came out in 2023. And, you know, and we're doing really, really well. So,
Okay. Yeah. Did I read that correctly? Is this the award winning? You've won an award for what? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it's a great read. Highly recommend it to my listeners. Going back to, I was taking down notes as much as I could about these miners' experiences. You said something there that the Pope being there was proof of life after death. Is that in relation to what Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross was saying? Yeah. Is that why she was saying it?
Yeah, and here's the thing. The Shepton, I call it the Shepton mythology. The Shepton mythology would have just been a myth, would have just been folklore, folk tales, if it wasn't for this guy named Ed Conrad. And Ed Conrad was a gonzo journalist. He was like Hunter H. Thompson. He embedded himself into the story. He became a part of the story. Ed Conrad took the miners, Felon and Throne, around. He had them interviewed by psychiatrists and psychologists. He had their interviews notarized, tape recorded. He took them down to Clearwater, Virginia, to meet Catherine Kubler-Ross, who was the Swiss psychotherapist. Now, Kubler-Ross is one of the leading forward thinkers of the 20th century. She wrote a book called On Death and Dying, and this explained how humans deal with grief. So when one of your loved ones dies, a lot of times we express anger, and then we negotiate, and it usually works like this. And here's that word God again, you know, we negotiate with God. God, if you bring him back, I'll be good. God, if you bring him back, I'll change my bad ways, you know. So we negotiate, and we go through all of these different phases, you know, grief, denial. And then finally, and for some of us, it might even take years, but we reach a point of acceptance. So finally, we accept the fact that my dear loved one is dead. But, you know, they may be not here physically, but at least I have all the sweet memories, you know, of that. So that's how that worked. Ed Conrad took them down to Virginia to meet Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. And she said, yes, this is an example of life after death. This was an example of what Pope John the 23rd did after he had died.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
How to have fun. Anytime. Anywhere. Step 1. Go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step 2. Collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step 3. Play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games. All for free?
Step 4. Unleash your excitement.
Woohoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So she signed off on it. There was another guy named John Grayson, University of Virginia, one of the experts on near-death experiences. And he, too, believed that this was something that was phenomenal that happened. Now, keep in mind that these miners were interviewed separately, and they both came up with similar stories. So that was the but Ed Conrad was the person that put this together, this Gonzo journalist. And just without Ed, Ed brought in the scientific realm. Ed made this more valid, or he validated it. That's what I should say. So he did a great service to this narrative. So he was just another one. But when you talk about Shepton, okay, here's Ed Conrad, a name you never heard of. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, some people know of her, but I mean, she was, you know, again, one of the outstanding, you know, individuals of the 20th century. Howard Hughes, the billionaire from Houston, sent up tungsten drill bits so they could drill through the rock and the coal 330, you know, feet below. So Howard Hughes played a part in this. So there were all kinds of things. And then so Shepton happened in 63. They rescued the guys, and they dealt with the allegations of cannibalism, which were horrible. And then I think it was 8 years later, 1971, the song Timothy came out. So once again, the people in the village of Shepton had to go and deal with, you know, the accusations of cannibalism and all this. When really, think about this. This Shepton narrative should have been one about miracles. It should have been one about human survival and the technology that saved their lives and all this. But a lot of it was tainted by this horrible taste of cannibalism. So,
yeah.
You know, what is that karma or what? I mean, it was the bitter and the sweet, you know, they got rescued and then they got jumped on, you know?
So, yeah. And what an odd, rumor, like what an odd accusation, because like 2 weeks is a long time to be buried under, you know, 300 something feet of dirt, yeah, and rock and rubble. It's a long time under there, but in all reality, it was 2 weeks, like to even think for a second, like within the span of 2 weeks that you're going to eat your friend, like, yeah. That's I don't know, it's a crazy accusation. I can't say that I believe it either. Yeah. Do people Do the residents and the locals still believe that? Is that like urban legend around there now?
Well, back in 63, a lot of them did. And even today, Louis Bova's son, Johnny, believes there's a pot. And again, every time they interview him, every time there's an anniversary of Shepton, they interview him and he says he believes that there's a possibility that they ate his father. And he continues this grotesque, mythology, this cannibalistic horror. So, So that's another part of it too, which is just bizarre.
And it's such an attention grabber too. Like, it is so grotesque and it's kind of just in your face. It's one of those no-no subjects, and it's a no-no subject across the world. Most cultures have a thing against cannibalism.
Yeah. And I believe all cultures have cannibalism. And even with the Shepton rescue technology saved those people in Chile, 2010, the Chilean copper mine disaster. There was a movie called The 33. Listen to this. There were 33 people that were, they only had so much food. They had rations of maybe a thimble of milk, a thimble of tuna fish, and a cracker. That was the rations for the day. They knew that at a certain time, the rations were going to kick and there wouldn't be any left. There were 33. There were 32 people from Chile, and the one guy was from Uruguay. And there have been two books written about this Chilean copper mine disaster. And all the books talked about, they might have to resort to cannibalism to stay alive. And the joke was that if anybody got cannibalized, it'd be the guy from Uruguay. So that was a dark humor. But I mean, that was there. And even in the Alive, where the soccer team crashed into the mountain, mm-hmm. and there were frozen bodies, and they ate the flesh of their fellow humans, and they used scripture. They used scripture to validate. They're all Roman Catholics, and they used scripture to validate the fact that man feeds one another, whatever the scripture is. So they talked about that and used that. But it's cannibalism is widespread. Native Americans, it's not just primitive peoples, but So anyway, it's just a horrible thing that we don't like to talk about, but it became the thing about Shepton, and that's what I put on the cover of Shepton. I put the cover of a skull with a miner's cap, and but Shepton is a story that just keeps on resonating. And yes, I did the Easter egg drop in the Coal Region Hoodoo, because it needed to be told to an audience that had never heard about it. So it's, mm-hmm. A story that, it has really resonated. And I've had so many people just thank me for writing it. And, the Coal Region, the Shepton Mine Disaster talks about, the mining industry and just all of that and how horrible it was. I mean, just the people back home were like indentured servants. Plus they had breaker boys, little babies, kids that were like, 8, 9, 10 years old working in the mines. And here's one thing that's pretty, pretty incredible. We had laws protecting animals in the country, in the United States, before we had laws protecting kids. And these breaker boys that were down, they're going into the mines, getting maimed and crippled and everything, this was happening back in the, back in the day. So this was just a horrible thing, part of our, our legacy. So,
yeah.
They treated children like furniture.
Mm-hmm. Little bit more expendable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. I just saw the time. It's great interviews like this that always go so fast. I do want to touch with you, just for my audience sake, more on the UFOs and Bigfoot and just the things that are seen, especially on Chestnut Ridge. Two things before we launch off of Shepton here. When I was reading through and reading all of the different experiences that these guys had when they were down there, the visions of Pope John the 23rd and the weird humanoids, and there's a marble staircase that seems to go up into some other dimensional place, and there's this blue light, like, and then the out-of-body experiences, all of that kind of made me think of, are you very familiar with non-sensory chambers? Like, people voluntarily go into them.
Like a sensory deprivation chamber?
Yes. And people have reported also, I think the Shepton story kind of lends credibility to some of the things that people report when they're in these deprivation chambers, because they also report out-of-body experiences, visions, psychic downloads, stuff like that. So I think it does lend credibility. So that was just the thought.
Yeah.
And the... Thank you. I want to contribute. And then the last thing, I just had a question, because you had brought up how Felon and Throne had the symbiotic relationship, and it's kind of what allowed them to survive this. I wanted to know, because I read another source that suggested that the miners had experienced a shared psychosis.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you, because your background in psychology, if you had given any thought to that, or like, what were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, that's what they said in Skeptical Inquirer. They thought that maybe it might be that. But I approached this story through the words of Felon and Throne. You know, I took their words as valid, so I just wrote about that in the Shepton mythology. I wrote about it in psychological terms. What would it be like to be crawling on your hands and feet, getting bloodied, you know, sucking in coal and dirt particles in pure darkness, having no promise of being rescued? You know, just that, having, you know, almost close to hypothermia, you know, being like a constant, like maybe 54 degrees, you know, under the thing, damp, cold. Every now and then there would be a rush, another little cave-in, you know, because so the configuration of the mind kept on changing. So what was that like? So I think they were traumatized. I think they were adrenalized. I think that they might have had a thirst, but I don't think they had hunger. I think that this lasted for quite a while. And I think you get into this survival mode. And what they did, I think what they did was they would tap, dig, and pray. They had a mantra. So they would tap so that the rescue team could hear them. They had shovels. They would try to dig their way out. And then they would pray. So they would do all of that. And I believe that it was that mantra, that prayer, that allowed them to have that out-of-body experience. So I think that's what happened. And again, everybody talks about the sensory deprivation and yada, yada, yada. I don't believe it was that. Back home in Pennsylvania, I do a thing called the art of floating. And you get into a sensory deprivation tank. You know, you're naked. You have earplugs. It's black. It's body temperature. It's a foot of Epsom salts. And you just float there. And this was designed by John, the LSD experiments. Yeah, I'm blocking John, whatever. But anyway, he designed this. And so I've done this numerous times. Every time I do it, it's a different experience, you know, different like delta waves or alpha waves or whatever. So, you know, you respond in different ways. But, you know, certainly the mind, if there's a gap, the mind will confabulate and make things up. But down there, it was just that they were deprived of sensory stimulation. You know, there was just that blackness and that, you know, they had each other, you know, to keep it going. They had each other to depend on. And finally, when they were, and I wrote a chapter called Extrication. And if anyone gets the book, The Shepton Mythology, don't read Extrication at night. It's a horror story. I wanted that to be the most horrific thing I've ever written about claustrophobia, and it's wicked. So don't go there at night. So, but no, I believe that what they experienced was genuine. It was biological. I don't, you know, maybe, yeah, certainly sensory deprivation played a part in it, but I don't believe that what they saw and experienced was conjured up. I believe that they maybe reached a realm, a dimension where they were in tune with something. You know, there was something happening down there. So rather than it being a negative, it was a positive. So they,
Well, I'm thank you. Thank you for the answer. I was curious, you know, your where your mindset and with your background, like kind of how you were looking at that. But, you know, to add to your point also, like, I don't think people realize how important this is, but one of them, Felon or Throne, I cannot remember which one, was not a Catholic. Throne was not a Catholic, and yet he still saw the Pope. Like, why? Yeah. Why would that be part of his?
Here's what happened. So they went to the Hazelton General Hospital, and what they saw in the mind, they called the stranger. They didn't call Pope John XX. They called it the stranger. And when they got to the Hazelton General Hospital, there, and most of the people there were Catholics. You know, this is a large Italian, Lithuanian, Polish, you know, German group population. But there on the wall was a picture of Pope John XXIII. And Throne, the atheist, goes, "Davy, look, there he is. There's the stranger. That's the guy we saw down there." Now, Dave Felon knew what the Pope looked like because he was a devout Catholic, went to church and had the Pope's, probably had 15 pictures of the Pope in his house. Not Throne. Throne was a drinker, womanizer, cigar smoker. I mean, just a young age, 28 years old, you know, he just liked to party. You know, he didn't go to church, but there he saw the stranger and he pretty much validated that. I mean, just amazing. And they interviewed him on one of the local TV things. They only gave him $50. They got him cheap, and they talked about that. And Associated Press called Shepton one of the top stories of the year. It was only surpassed by the assassination of John Kennedy in 63. Wow. So Shepton was a huge story. And again, a story of human survival and, you know, the amazing. And they had all kinds of, there were thousands of people there, people from the National Guard, Salvation Army, you know, the militia, the state police, the paparazzi, the rubberneckers, thousands of rubberneckers. I mean, lots and lots and lots of people. Mm-hmm. And finally, they were able to dig them out and get them out. And, you know, and then, and that's when it began. They came out and there was, it was just a glorious celebration. And then the questions, what happened to Louis Bova? So they had to answer these. The Chicago Daily News interviewed Davy Felon, and they talked, they insinuated cannibalism. And Felon said, "Only evil men would ask such a question." Because what it goes, "I didn't do that." It goes, "Only evil men would ask such a question." They had both died before I could interview them, but I knew a person, a business person in the Hazelton area that worked with Dave Felon, and he would ask Davy all kinds of questions. I was able to interview him, but he stayed anonymous. I couldn't use his name. You know, he's a business guy. But he would ask Davy questions like, "What about the ancestors?" And they would talk about stairways leading to heaven with all of their family and ancestors and people that even though they never saw him before, they knew were connected, you know. So, I mean, things like that. I mean, just a lot of weird things seen in darkness. So Shepton mythology.
Just such an incredible story Shepton is. And I you know, I'd never heard of it. I'm sure a lot of my audience will say that they haven't either. Yeah. I've got some younger members in the audience as well. But yeah, just an incredible thing to read about. Just the whole thing. Mind blowing. We've just got a little bit of time left, but I want to give my audience like a taste of some of the other things that are in the book. So I think I'm going to risk it and jump into maybe a big thing, but can you expand a little bit on Chestnut Ridge and some of the things that have been witnessed and experienced and reports that have come out of there? Feel free to talk about Kecksburg whole thing and Stan Gordon, the work that he did on that, or anything else that pops out. Because Chestnut Ridge in itself is such, like you said, it's such an active area in itself. And I do wonder, what is it about Chestnut Ridge that makes it so?
Well, even before we get to that, when you look at the Pacific Northwest, look at, you know, Bigfoot, Sasquatch, UFOs, Kenneth Arnold. I mean, all of that stuff. I mean, you know, it was like the birthplace of Bigfoot and UFOs. I mean, it was, you know, the Pacific Northwest. So, you know, we talk about that, and we know that this Bigfoot thing has been going around for centuries. It wasn't just Washington State and California, but in British Columbia, you know, the coastal peoples talked about Sasquatch for thousands of years. So, so that's one epicenter. Another one is Chestnut Ridge, Pennsylvania. It's a four-county area east of Pittsburgh. It's a 100-mile stretch that goes down to West Virginia. And this is where the most sightings of Bigfoot combined with UFO sightings take place. Now, we know this because we have our go-to guy, Stan Gordon. And whenever Stan's been doing this forever, and Stan investigated the Kecksburg crash in 1965 that took place out there in Chestnut Ridge. But right now, whenever the state police get a call, a report about a Bigfoot or a flying saucer, they tell the people to call Stan Gordon. So Stan keeps all of this data, so he can tell you when and where, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Jones saw this Bigfoot and the orb. I mean, some really good exact data. So he's been the keeper of the flame. He's been documenting all this stuff. And we have a number of people in Western Pennsylvania, but the Chestnut Ridge area is just so ripe with anomalies. And then there's another one, Greene County, that has as many things. But, you know, Chestnut Ridge has Bigfoot and the UFOs. It has the Kecksburg crash that I talked about. That is what's interesting about Kecksburg is that it's our Roswell. And by night, the government trucks came in, the military trucks came in and carted something out. It was covered with tarps. And then with the Freedom of Information Act, when we tried to find out what exactly they took and where they took it, all of this information about Kecksburg was either lost or redacted. So we got nothing. We got nothing. So same thing as Roswell, you know, and whatever's happening now with the government, I know that in July of 2023, we had the congressional hearings on UFOs with talking about the, you know, where the vehicles were and where the bodies were. David Grush was talking about that. But then just last month, the government did it again. So I don't know. I mean, it seems like they're trying to be transparent. But I'm waiting for the big reveal. I mean, where are they? And, you know, and we're not getting this. And I'll tell you what, you know, I'm in Florida right now. My wife and I are snowbirds. And I wrote a letter last year to Marco Rubio, who was on the UFO committee. I said, listen, let's make David Grush show his cards. He says he knows where the vehicles are. He knows where the bodies are. Okay, this is just a tease. Let's go and find out where they are. He said that he would give that information up, you know, at the right time, with people that had the right credentials. So, you know, I wrote a letter to Marco and I got a letter back, and now he's, I believe, Secretary of State. So I think that ends our communication there about UFOs. But, but you know, the government seems to be playing a game, because even though they're talking about transparency and they're going to have a private group to go and look at this information, we're still not any closer to the truth. You know, we're talking the talk, we're not walking the talk. So I'm skeptical. I'm skeptical. And I've been following this, you know, extensively.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been following it at a deeper level. I covered UFOs and like extraterrestrials on my show for a couple seasons ago. And since then, like, yeah, just trying to follow along with all of the groups and the new advances and the hearings. And it's like, you know, one step forward, two steps back, like we go. Yeah. And then, got to go in a skiff. We can't disclose it. This last hearing was really rather interesting. I followed the Grush stuff very closely, and I did think that was very interesting. I had hope for a second we'd actually get some information.
And he said he didn't say anything, but he interviewed 40 government people. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. Government people, you know, when they get out of there after their, 30 years or whatever they have to do, they have a really good pension with benefits. This is gold. This is the American dream, you know, chasing that thing. You know, they would be very reluctant, you know, to lie or to get caught or whatever. So the fact that he was able to talk to 40 people, even off record, you know, is telling. You know, so they had the courage to go and say this. Again, you're taking a chance. You know, if you lost your job, that you're losing a lot. So anyway, he claims that he talked to 40 people that were involved in reverse engineering these craft, you know, so people that got burned and hurt doing this. So that's what he said. But again, you know, we're not seeing, you know, seeing is believing. So, and I'm from Missouri. So.
Yeah, man. It sure is. But yeah, so that is a taste. It's a very good taste of all of the things you are able to talk about, like the way your mind works, Maxim, is kind of incredible to behold. But you can see that all in Coal Region Hoodoo. Listeners, we're going to wrap it up here in just a minute or so. But I wanted to ask you a fun question, I guess. I consider it fun. I'm curious. I'm always curious to hear. But have you personally actually experienced either the paranormal or, you know, a Bigfoot or seen a UFO, anything like that? Or do you just write about it?
No, I'm a Vietnam vet, and I saw UFOs. I mean, in my book, Flying Saucer Esoteric, in the introduction, I talk about that. I saw numerous UFOs, and by that I mean solid, tangible contacts, faster and more maneuverable than any guided missile missiles we had or the Soviet Union had. And again, not marsh gas, not reflections from Venus, not I wasn't tripping, you know, none of that. It was solid contact. What they did was we would write about it. We would put them in the logbook, and then we were told to, you know, keep your mouth shut. You didn't see anything. And then the next morning, these logbooks would disappear. Keep in mind, most of us guys that were, you know, aboard the ship were like under the age of 20. So we were just little babies fighting this war. So when they told us to keep our mouths shut, we did that. We were very loyal. You know, we didn't start to protest until years later. So, but anyway, yeah, I saw UFOs, and I've spoken with other fellow members, you know, in who are radarmen, and they said the same thing. I talked to guys from other disciplines. You know, this is widespread. And I'll tell you what, 2024, Navy pilots off the coast of San Diego saw that little Tic Tac video. Mm-hmm. That's the Holy Grail, solid, maneuverable, tangible. Again, you know, either ours, theirs, or something else. It's always the same thing, either ours, theirs, or either extraterrestrial or interdimensional. I mean, take your pick, but it's something else. 3% we don't know. But here's the thing. The Tic Tac video was hovering. Now, the Pentagon changed UFO to UAP, unidentified aerial phenomenon. This Tic Tac hovered, went underwater. So again, the Pentagon changed the name to UAP, unidentified anomalous phenomenon. So the Pentagon keeps on changing the terms and maybe even moving the goalposts. But, you know, I think, like with people, Kristen, like you and I, you know, on this, like maybe we could at some point find an answer. I mean, I hope, you know, we're not here 5 years from now, you know, having the same conversation. You know, I'm hoping we're a little bit closer to closure, you know, so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, man. That's so cool. That's great. I was not expecting that answer. But I guess I'll need to pick up a copy of the Flying Saucer Esoteric. You said you talk about your experiences in that.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, contact Jeff. Have him send you a copy with my with my compliments. Yeah,
I will.
I'm serious.
And then because I saw that one after I got the Coal Region Hoodoo, I was like, oh, dang, because UFOs are my jam. I love it. Yeah. The Tic Tac incident, by the way, that's like one of my top all time. That's what really turned me around the corner on UFOs. And like, oh, there's
that's solid. Here. You can't. That's, you know, solid. That's solid. Yeah.
And then for my listeners who are more into Bigfoot stuff, you just recently, as I understand it, came out with what was the recent book? Lost Tribes of Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Go ahead. What do you cover? Just briefly, what do you cover in that book? What can my listeners look forward to with that one if they're interested?
Well, you know, if they're in the camp of the Sasquatch hunters, you know, the flesh and blood people, you know, I'm on the other side. You know, they call me Woo. I've been called Dr. Woo. But I believe that if it's not flesh and blood, then what is it? Well, I take a look at Einstein's wormhole theory, you know, that it may be there may be a hole in the space-time continuum where Bigfoot or UFOs shape-shift from one dimension into another. So I talk about that. I talk about Carl Jung's collective unconscious, that maybe what we're seeing is residue from our caveman ancestors that we carry in our DNA and our amygdala, or maybe mass hallucinations. But whatever it is, it's, you know, when we find out what it is, that may be even more fascinating than the actual Bigfoot or UFO. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I mean, what is that mechanism? You know, because humans are ignorant and we're scared. We do not know. We're like little babies. We're just taking little baby steps. And we have a lot of theories that we talk about, but nobody knows. So,
yeah, for sure. So, listeners, you have your pick of subjects here. You know, take your pick, get them all. Hopefully, definitely grab Coal Region Hoodoo because I've read it and I liked it. Maxim, any upcoming events or projects that you would like to share with everyone before we move to our closeout?
Yeah, I'm working, you know, I'm promoting The Lost Tribes of Bigfoot and all the other books. I'm down in Florida right now and I'm hooked up with a number of expos. 2025 is going to be huge. I've been invited to be a guest speaker at a number of conferences. And again, I want to go and not that our field needs to be legitimized, but I want to go and legitimize it, validate it, look at it through an academic lens and bring some sanity to it. Because, I mean, I think a lot of people, some people have dumbed it down, you know, some of these knuckle draggers, and that's just not right. I mean, I listen to plenty of podcasts and, you know, some of these people just don't come across as being very knowledgeable, and I hate that. I think that, you know, we need to breathe new life into the paranormal, whether it's cryptozoology or whatever it is, and make some sense and connect it to the science, because I think it's all the same. I think the supernatural is part of the scientific. It's all the same realm. You know, it's just we haven't figured out what the cause and effect what the theories are that make it work. So that's what I try to do. And I think I provide a value to the genre. Well, hopefully I do. I mean, that's how I, you know, see myself. So.
Yeah, I think you do too. Like the academic approach is very clear, just reading Coal Region Hoodoo. And just something you offer a lot of balance to it as well. Like I can't tell you how much I appreciated you talking about Bigfoot hoaxes and hoaxers.
Yeah.
Like I appreciate seeing all of the sides and mm-hmm. then just how it all comes together. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you do a wonderful job of that. Where would you like to direct my listeners to find and follow you online? And where would you actually like to send them to pick up copies of your books?
Yeah. Well, they could do one of two things. You know, I mean, I always encourage people to support local authors and local independent bookstores. So, you know, if they want to go that route, they could contact me at www.maximfurick.com. And I have a website there and they could contact me for autographed copies of the book. Or if they wanted to do something, I guess, more immediate, they could contact Amazon, and Amazon has all of my books there. And you know, and Jeff Bezos, the billionaire, he could use a couple more bucks too. So
Okay. All right.
Then he says Jeff's going to sue me because I say this all the time.
Well, I'm glad I got you on my show before all that goes down. All right, Maxim, this has been absolutely excellent. It just went by in a blink, and that's just how it always goes. But you're going to join me backstage for a little bit of Patreon. We're gonna get into some more fun stuff that's in the book, or I don't know. I'm kind of digging the getting into third man syndrome. Okay. But before we close it out, help me close it out. Would you like to leave my audience with any final thoughts, words of wisdom, or a piece of advice?
Yeah, you know, this is a wonderful community, this paranormal community. I'm just so glad to be a part of it. You know, I've been well accepted and all that. But you know, just stay the course. There's a lot of people that don't like us. They think that we're, you know, we're fools, you know, whether it's a scientist and academics or whatever, but, or the public, but, you know, stay the course and believe, you know, what's in your hearts, because, you know, it's, J. Allen Hynek was the one that who pointed this out. You know, he was a skeptic. And whenever somebody saw somebody, he was the one of the first ones to say it was, you know, marsh gas, or these people were needy, or they were hallucinating, or whatever. He would always just discount them. Towards the end, J. Allen Hynek, who was with the government's Project Blue Book, Project Sign, and Project Grunge, he was a main player. Towards the end, Hynek realized that the scientific community and himself were being disrespectful to these people that saw things. And he started to go and listen to what they had to say. What did you see? When did you see it? You know, et cetera, et cetera. So he turned around and became a true believer. And he, you know, not this ridiculous skeptic that he was in the beginning. So he did come around. And the story of J. Allen Hynek is one that we all should follow, because not only did he turn around from being a skeptic, a hardcore skeptic, but also he gave us what the field needs. He gave us terminology, whether it was high strangeness and the levels of high strangeness, or close encounters of the first, second, third, and fourth kind. He gave us that. Before J. Allen Hynek, we had none of that. So he gave that to the genre, to, you know, and we really desperately needed that. And, you know, to this day, we're indebted to people like J. Allen Hynek for, you know, for helping to give us some definitions, and which in with the paranormal, that it goes undefined. You know, we need that, those definitions. So, you know, he's one of my favorites, along with John Keel. And so anyway, that's, you know, take a lesson from the past. You know, all the readers, read as much as you can and form your own opinions, you know, do that. But yeah, buy those books by Maxim W. Furick. I think you'll like them. So.
Very good. Paranormal researcher, paranormal author, Maxim Furick. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you so much, Kristen. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Learn more about my guest at the links below. I have also included links that you can follow to pick up copies of all of his works. We've still got a week until Christmas. These would make excellent gifts for the supernaturally inclined in your life. Check it out in today's notes. Maxim joined me backstage for a very interesting chat about the third man syndrome, or more commonly termed third man factor. If you are unfamiliar with it, it's a very, very interesting phenomenon that has been reported in cases where folks are in some kind of emergency, or a time of crisis, or even close brushes with death. They report someone helping them who was never there. You can find this backstage guest chat and more over at patreon.com/paranormgirlpod. Other ways to support the show are by sharing the program with others and following on social and YouTube at Paranorm Girl Pod. If you do check me out on YouTube, be sure to like the video, subscribe to the channel, and hit that notification button. That will wrap today's show. Join me next week for the mid-season finale, featuring our final guest of the year. Host of Mystery Archives, Cody Richardson, joins me. Cody is also the author of a series of books called Stories from the Archives, which are collections of some of his most frightening episodes from the show. The show is already damn scary. The books? Whew, dudes, I was looking over my shoulder. Okay. In addition to talking about the books and the show, we get into the dark and the demonic. Just in time for Christmas. I will see you guys back here on Tuesday. Until then, stay safe, keep the nightlight on, and sleep with one eye open.
Save big this holiday season.
All in the Kroger app.
Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It can get lonely climbing Mount McKinley, so to entertain myself, I go to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, I can play hundreds of online casino-style games for free, like online slots, bingo, slingo, and more. Plus, I get a daily login bonus. It's just too bad that up here, I don't have anyone to share my excitement with. Woohoo! Woohoo!
Live the Chumba life anytime, anywhere. Play for free now at ChumbaCasino.com.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.